Werewolf Power Makeup, created by Opal Song. Okay, magical girl AU here, and I'm thinking Derek is actually, on top of everything else, a magical girl. I think maybe this is something that runs in the Hale family, and magical girls have been, they used to be around Beacon Hills a lot, and like they had one magical girl that was like wolf themed or something that hung around Beacon Hills. And then after the Hales moved away, obviously she disappeared. And so bad things have been happening. And then, yeah. Just imagine, after all the shit that goes down in canon, like, after a bunch of this stuff goes down and Derek Hale has made, like, terrible choices, we're talking after, like, season two or something, and everybody's like, oh my gosh, we're, like, okay, finally, we're seeming to, like, get back on track. Derek's a werewolf, Scott's a werewolf, Styles is Styles. Like, we've got a couple other werewolves running around. Okay, we're going to do this. Peter is dead. And then, like, the magical girl evil things show up and Styles starts freaking out because the Beacon Hills magical girl hasn't been seen in X amount of years. And then they're stuck. Like, Styles and Derek are, like, stuck in a closet together. And Yeah. And Derek has to transform in front of him. And Styles freaks out. The end. Have a happy holiday, Anetsuno. Hockey Power Make Up, created by Opal Song. This is a generic hockey magical girl AU thing. I'm not super into hockey fandom anymore. However, I was into it for long enough that the magical girl AU is pretty hilarious to me. So what if you have a hockey player, this guy who has worked so, so hard for his entire life, starting his parents put him in hockey when he was like three, and which, yes, they do start that early. And he's been working super hard, but, and he's finally made it to the NHL, but he has a secret. And his secret is that on the side, he is also a magical girl. And so this magical girl will show up in all sorts of places, like all over the US and Canada, because hockey teams travel, right? And I don't know how this hockey player got this magical girl power. It would be extra hilarious if it was passed to him from one of the, like, WHL players. That would be extra, extra funny. Like, he was the new and upcoming one and met her, and she was like, oh, you are perfect for this, and then passed it along to him, and now he's like, ah, what am I doing? And yet there are these, you know, evil shadow beings, and he needs to be able to fight them. And yeah, all the, like, pretty princess transformation sequences and stuff combined with big burly hockey player who just wants to play hockey. I don't really have any coherent thoughts other than I really like this concept. But yeah. Happy holidays, Anapods. Lucius Power Make Up, created by Opal Song. So this year I'm doing magical girl AUs of various things, and I'm just gonna meta them a bit. And yeah, of course I chose to do a Final Fantasy 15 one, because guess who would be the guess who basically is a magical girl? The king of freaking Insomnia, the king of Lucius, Noct. But you know what would be extra hilarious is if one of the other guys was also, or was a magical girl. And I feel like the instinct here is to make it Prompto, to just like lean into that he is sort of the other, and he is actually kind of like a Sailor Moon or Sailor Venus type, and has been bouncing around Insomnia, like defeating shadow monsters, and Nacht knows that there's this like Sailor Venus, but he doesn't know who it is. And separately, he and Prompto are becoming friends and all of that sort of thing. And I feel like that's the instinct there. I think it would be extra hilarious if instead of Nacht or Prompto, it was like Iggy who was the magical girl. And since he's not from Insomnia, he's been there for quite a while, but since he's not from there, this is not like a known thing. And it's passed down his family line. So his parents know about it. And every so often he goes home and they give him training and whatever, but mostly he's, you know, hangs out in Insomnia. And that could have been the reason that he was sent to Insomnia in the first place. Yeah, because there was like an infestation or something, or maybe his uncle had also been a magical girl at some point and could continue his training. And so, yeah, he's the one jumping around and not telling the prince about it, because like hardcore secrecy is the thing. And he feels guilty about not telling his prince and for being out at odd hours and that sort of thing. But yeah. But he does it anyway, because that's what you do when you're a Sailor Venus type. And Nacht once again knows and is all like, ah, who is this person that is like defeating all of these monsters in the city, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Oh, you could even make it tragic and say that Iggy was just come into the city because of the infestation when Nacht got attacked when he was a kid. And that was, Iggy feels like it was his first failure. So he feels like he needs to be better constantly. Oh, Iggy. Anyway, obviously there's going to be a dramatic reveal sort of in game canon era at some point when they're on the road, and maybe they're surrounded by monsters, or they're in the tomb of an ancient king and there's just like shadow demons everywhere and they're completely out of potions and all of the magic is dry, like just everybody's been used up and all of the astrals aren't responding to Nacht, and it really looks like they are going to die. And Iggy breaks and transforms into whatever his magical girl form is, and suddenly all is revealed. And also there's a sparkly magical girl transformation sequence that amuses the guys to no end. The end. Happy holidays, Akadievna. Spider power make up! Created by Opal Song. So I'm doing magical girl AUs this year, just metaing them up. And you may be wondering, how is magical girl Spider-Man different than, say, regular Spider-Man? Because the whole with great power comes great responsibility still definitely, you know, scans with that whole thing. What if instead of getting bitten by a spider, Peter Parker now has a telepathic spider like Penny Parker from Into the Spider-Verse does? And this telepathic spider tells him that he is the chosen one, the reincarnation of, like, say, the Princess of the Moon, and that he now has to save the world. And Peter Parker is like, I have homework. And the spider is like, but lo, someone is being injured as we speak over there by this shadow monster thing that only you can defeat. And Peter Parker is like, but superheroes. And the telepathic spider explains that these very specific types of shadow monsters cannot be injured by superheroes, by human, like, technology and whatever, and maybe even mostly humans can't see them. Very similar to how things roll in Sailor Moon, I believe. And so then Peter Parker has to take some sort of, like, brooch. Maybe it looks like a pocket computer. And it's super bejeweled and kind of in the shape of a spider and transforms into Spider-Man. Only a much more bejeweled version of Spider-Man, and then goes and saves the day. Yeah. I think that is actually kind of hilarious. It's even more hilarious when Peter figures out much later after meeting the Avengers that Thor can definitely see all of these things and injure them, and they have an amazing team up. Happy holidays, Dr. Fumbles McStupid. Vulcan Power Make Up! Created by Opal Song. So, Magical Girl AUs this year, and okay, so the obvious choice for a magical girl in the Star Trek alternate original series universe is Kirk, because really, Kirk. However, I would like to propose maybe alternate people who could be magical girls. Firstly, Spock could be a magical girl easily, because, like, what do we know about Vulcan? And also, maybe his mom was a human magical girl who fell in love with a Vulcan, and also maybe Vulcan, like, has shadow, evil, whatever things that magical girls are supposed to fight, and she goes over there, and that's where she meets Spock's dad, and they fall in love, and it's great. I'm obviously very sketchy on the actual canonical ways that they fell in love. I think it involved Spock's dad coming to Earth, though. And yeah, and then he is a magical girl from there, which is highly illogical with the transforming and the clothes coming out of nowhere, etc. Also, hilariously, could be a magical girl in a very rough and tumble, hilarious way, is McCoy, who, as part of the divorce, was his wife found out about his magical girlness and desperately, because being a magical girl is a dangerous profession, desperately wants to make sure that their daughter does not inherit the power, which is why McCoy has basically been kicked off planet to try to get as far away from her as possible so that when somebody inherits the power, it's not his daughter, which doesn't happen. She definitely does inherit it. And also, jerk move, former Mrs. McCoy. Also, McCoy would 100% be a doctor or nurse themed magical girl, which is extra hilarious. Chekhov would be, oh my gosh, so hilarious as a magical girl. Just imagine the entire crew is normal, and then Chekhov, like, they get onto this planet and there are a bunch of, like, monsters there that people can maybe see, but only kind of, and everybody's sort of succumbing to depression or despair or whatever that these monsters cause, and they're plaguing the planet, and everybody's like, oh no, and magical girls aren't a super known thing in, say, this particular iteration of how things are going. And Chekhov just transforms into, it, like, for the first little while, just this magical girl keeps appearing. And they're like, okay. And then at some point, somebody figures it out. Maybe him and Sulu are, you know, stuck in a cave somewhere. They're being hemmed in by these monsters. And Sulu is like, oh no, we are going to die. And Chekhov is like, no, we're not. And then transforms in front of him. Or it's him and Kirk in the cave. And Kirk is like, I will keep your secret. Yeah. Not that Sulu wouldn't keep the secret, but yeah. Anyway, I just, yeah. It would also be very, very funny if magical girls aren't exactly common on Earth, but they are definitely known. But they're not common. And everyone sort of thinks that Kirk should be one. He has all the sort of like markers of someone who would be a magical girl. Once he sort of gets into Starfleet and starts like, you know, doing well and that sort of thing. And especially once he gets the Enterprise, everybody's like, well, I guess that's why. And he's like, I'm not. And then hilariously, the entire rest of his bridge crew are people who are magical girls, all except for Kirk, who is the normal one. The end. Happy holidays, duck girly. Force power make up. Created by Opal Song. So, Magical Girl AU time. So I'm going to choose the original trilogy for this particular Star Wars Magical Girl AU. And I know I'm going to make another of these, so there will also be a prequel one available when these are eventually all posted. So keep an eye out for that if that's what you're interested in. But original trilogy. So we have Luke and Leia and Han as our original trilogy with Chewie tagging along and a bunch of droids. And so trying to figure out who would be the magical girl who's going to help set the universe to rights. And we're assuming that this is either like, so the question is this something completely separate from the Force, or is this also like a Force driven thing? And part of me wants this to be something completely separate from the Force. Something that is, you know, So I'm trying to decide whether it should be a family line thing or just a, like, the problem is if you make it like a chosen destiny thing, then you're basically putting it back in the hands of the Force. You could also make it a sort of like ancient non-Sith artifact, just an ancient artifact that is, you know, running around. Oh my gosh, that's hilarious. Okay, so this is an ancient artifact that like just is tooling around the universe. And okay, so the question is, who finds this artifact? Because we have, like, let's be real, we have our three main characters. Did I for a hot second think that Chewie was going to be the magical girl? I may have considered it for a hot second because that would be funny. But basically we have Han and Luke and Leia, and I really like Han as the normal one, the one that just kind of gets dragged into the mess and can leave at any time. And so now the question is between Luke or Leia, and because I already have thoughts for prequels, like, I have a feeling that either one of them could have been left this particular thing from their parents. So the question is the magical girl a Tatooine sort of tradition, or is it a Naboo tradition? And I kind of want it to be a Tatooine tradition. Nope, thinking prequel stuff. I'm going to make it a Naboo tradition here. It does fit with the, like, sparkle happy, you know, everything looks great on Naboo sort of thing. The pastoral picturesqueness of it. Magical Girl would go really well there. It also kind of works with their, oh my gosh. Okay, so I just had a whole bunch of thoughts right now about prequel stuff. So, yeah, I might cut this part out, but yeah. Wait with bated breath for that information. But what we need to know here is that Luke has been in possession of this, like, trinket, and it looks like a makeup case, only extra bejeweled or something. Maybe it's something else. I don't want to stick too closely to, like, Sailor Moon canon. But he's in possession of this bejeweled piece of jewelry. that is just gaudy enough that it really shouldn't be around Tatooine. And honestly, his uncle probably should have sold it because it looks like it could be worth a lot. But he never did because it's Luke's, and it's Luke's, and it's really the only possession Luke has that he knows is from his mom. And when he turns about 15-ish, that's the first time that it, like, speaks to him or something. In any case, he turns into a magical girl for the first time at about 15, and he's got some sort of mentor magical girl thing within the locket, or magical spirit. Okay, spirit animal, not the appropriation thing, but like an animal that is a ghost that like can help him you know, navigate this thing. And Tatooine is a great place for it because as a magical girl, he becomes kind of a beacon of hope and starts to wipe out evildoers from the land type deal, only like magical evildoers. Anyway, it works as a great beacon of hope. And then he finds out that he is also a Jedi, and that's part of why he gets all of his, like, handles all of his Jedi powers really well and learns it all really easily, is because he has experience with the magical girl powers already, even though they're entirely separate. And yes, there is a, like, fancy magical girl transformation sequence. Yeah. The end. Happy holidays, Sweden. Ramen Power Makeup! Created by Opal Song. So I'm doing magical girl AUs this year, and I know last year for Pod Together, my group and I came up with a Naruto magical girl AU. But that was a while ago, and also I figured, you know, why not do another take on it? Now I have to think of another take on it because I really want to do a magical girl AU, but I think I may have used up most of my thoughts on that particular subject. I'm trying to figure out if there was somebody that I didn't include in that one. Okay. So this is going to be really niche, but I also know that a bunch of people have at least been listening to my podfic, and there have been a lot of people who have read the fic, but this is going to be an AU of a fic. This is going to be fic for the fic reverse, which I have been podficking, and which is by Black Cat, which involves the Kyubi no Kitsune being sent back in time after a, like, failed future where they don't actually defeat Kaguya, or she comes back after they defeat him or whatever and she wins. And they send him back in Naruto's body, or Naruto and Sakura send him back in Naruto's body, and then he has to, like, save the world and become human, kind of. And what if in that universe Naruto had been, like, magical girl Naruto, kind of, like, from my Pod Together project, like the Sailor Moon type deal? So Naruto had been Sailor Moon, and now Kyubi, or Kurama, is now in this body that is still Sailor Moon, and is popped back in time, and now, like, is Sailor Moon back in time. So Kyubi no Kitsune Kurama as Sailor Moon. He would be the angriest Sailor Moon ever. I am now really enchanted by this idea of he has to, like, go through the entire Sparkle transformation sequence and gets the, like pigtails, only they're red instead of blonde, and, like, he's still got his fangs and claws in Sailor Moon form, and he just tends to like attack things with his claws instead of, you know, using heart power makeup or whatever, or heart power emotion or whatever the like actual attacks are with his wand, and he keeps just like attacking things. Yeah. I'm really enchanted by this idea now. Oh, yeah. Anyway, for Zandapod, I really hope that you were listening to Reverse, or at least have read it, so that you know, so that you can, like, sort of pull from the same references. But, yeah, now I kind of really want this fic. Yeah, happy holidays. Pirate Power Makeup! Created by Opal Song. So I'm doing Magical Girl AUs this year, and I know I did a One Piece thing last year for these same holiday cards, but oh gosh, am I going to do a One Piece thing this year as well, because Sailor Moon and One Piece crossed over. Hear me out. So you have the Sailor Scouts, right? And I'm going to do straight up Sailor Moon. We're not going to fancy about with making it sort of a generic magical girl thing. We're just going to straight up do the Sailor Scouts for some reason, like their souls, whatever, were reincarnated into the One Piece world. So certain characters in One Piece have like their... they would eventually have their powers, but also, you know, bits of their personalities, that sort of stuff. And it maps pretty well onto the Straw Hat crew, provided we don't include Jinbei, because then we have one too many people. And it makes me really sad because Jinbei is definitely part of the crew. But yeah, I ran out of Sailor Scouts. But yeah. Obviously, Luffy is Sailor Moon, and because, like, of course he is, power of friendship and that sort of thing. And also the eating thing. Yeah. Yeah. And then next, I believe, is Mercury, and that's Usopp. And, I mean, Usopp takes the whole I am smart thing and really spins it in a different direction than Amy from Sailor Moon. But still, he is the one, not the one on the crew with the most sort of book smarts, which would be Robin or Chopper. But he does have that sort of like mechanical smartness thing because he does inventing and that sort of thing. Yeah. And Jupiter. Jupiter is Zoro. Oh, Zoro. Yeah. Yeah, it just fits. And also the green color scheme. And the willingness to beat people up. And the loyalty. And, of course, Mars is Sanji. What with the flaming leg and that sort of thing. I know, sidebar, I do know that somebody is has written, a fic where I believe it's Ace, who is, I believe, Sailor Moon. Anyway, like this sort of crossover thing, and it's hilarious. I haven't read all of it. I know I've read some of it. So this is something completely different. But yeah, I wanted to acknowledge that this idea has definitely been approached before in this fandom. And I think someone in there is Mars, and that's why it triggered now. Or it's just the fire thing. But yeah, Sanji with the fiery temper and literally setting his leg on fire later in the series for one of his attacks. Yeah, he is Mars, and Venus is Nami. Yeah, because she's the one who at first you're not sure if she's on your side, and you know there's a bit of betrayal there. She's also the pretty one. Let's be real. Yeah. So those are our inner scouts. And then we get to our outer scouts. And to me, it was pretty obvious that Robin is Pluto. Just something about the sort of like mysterious. And also the like everyone I love dies, which I don't know is actually a thing for Sailor Pluto, but it kind of feels like a thing. She does the time and space thing. And then like the other person that I was sort of thinking Pluto-ish was Brooke, also partly because of the order that they get added to the One Piece crew, but also just because, again, the like I am beyond time death thing, except that Brooke is also a musician and he's the only one on the crew who is a musician. And yeah, that's a pretty good fit for Neptune. So yeah, Brooke is Neptune. It's great. Musicians, soft, tender souls. Also, Neptune is a raging lesbian. And so the I want to see your panties thing still scans. I have a feeling she would be much more polite about it, though. And Frankie is Uranus. And just being, honestly, one of the most butch of the crew. He is Uranus and being very sort of earthy in that, like, he works with his hands a lot. He's a mechanic. He builds things, all of that sort of stuff. Yeah. Which leaves Chopper, our dear, adorable Chopper, as Saturn, our, like, Sailor of Death. Which he's a doctor, so that works and is super fun. And also he can turn into a giant rage monster, which also kind of works there. Yeah, and as I said, this leaves Jinbei out, not being a Sailor Scout. And there was like a hot second where I thought maybe of making him Tuxedo Mask. Until I thought of a much more hilarious idea for Tuxedo Mask. Law? Trafalgar Law is Tuxedo Mask. He is the reincarnation of that guy. Yeah. He just shows up. And unlike in Sailor Moon canon, where Tuxedo Mask shows up and says, like, some nonsense, throws a rose, and then just, like, disappears, Trafalgar Law shows up and is just, like, shocked at what they're all doing. But yeah, he just seems like the sort of outsider who's kind of part of the crew, but not kind of part of the crew. The other person I was going to have for Tuxedo Mask would have been Vivi. She would have been great. But yeah, Law just kind of fits better as the person that comes in and is like, oh God, what have you done? Yeah, and also, as terrible disguises go, minor spoilers for the Wano arc, but Law, when you first see him, is wearing this like straw basket helmet thing on his head as a disguise. It's a really poor disguise because also all of his like traditional Japanese samurai clothing has his pirate flag on it, like his pirate symbol on it, and he still carries his like huge ass 7-foot sword. And underneath that straw helmet thing that he is using as a face covering to keep his face covered to stay anonymous, he is still wearing his fuzzy hat. He decides to put this helmet on over his hat. And if that is not like a Tuxedo Mask, terrible disguise gambit, I don't know what is. The end. Happy holidays, God of Laundry Baskets. Feelings, Power, Make Up! Created by Opal Song. Doing Magical Girl AUs this year, and Yuri on Ice is ripe for Magical Girls. I don't know whether anybody's actually written one. Probably, so I'm probably retreading old ground. But I mean, really, Yuri is, like, he's Japanese, and it would be actually really in keeping with his character of thinking he's not great and being kind of stressed and eventually moving home and all of that stuff. if he were actually a magical girl and he's been doing this for a couple of years, he really wants to be like have skating be his sort of sole focus. And he tried that. He tried to make skating his entire focus and went over to America to make skating his entire focus. But then, like, things just weren't working out with skating, like, just like in canon, for all the exact same reasons. But with the added stress of feeling like he's left Japan vulnerable because he is that protector and he's feeling selfish that he's going over to America to pursue his dream. And the added stress of in America or wherever he is competing, he constantly finds people that he needs to fight with his magical girl powers. So there's this added sort of stress taking away from it. But basically it goes like it does in canon. And eventually he just kind of, well, gives up and says, well, I guess I'm going home. I'm going to just retire from that. I'll do the magical girl thing for a little while and then, you know, find someone who is the next magical girl in this line of magical girls. And I will, like, just retire, I guess. Only then Victor shows up and gets the skating thing back. And then Yuri Plisetsky shows up. And Yuri sort of... So it's been good that he's gone international with this magical girl thing. Like, everybody who knows that he's a magical girl, which is basically his family and Peachete and maybe a couple of the other people, I don't know, support people or other magical girls or something. Everybody who knows that he's a magical girl has thought that him going international was actually a really, really great thing for the, just for what they were trying, for fighting evil. So passing his power onto somebody who's not Japanese would not be, like, a super problem. And he finds Yuri Plisetsky, who seriously is everything that a magical girl should be. He's driven, and he's beautiful, and he's young, and he's optimistic in strange ways. And I think he just, like, finds out. And, yeah, I think he catches Yuri transforming at one point after skating. Like, Victor has gone off to do whatever. And there's an attack. And Yuri rushes over to Yuri to see... Yuri is the one attacked because he is this shining beacon that all of the, like, dark monsters want. Shining beacon of talent or whatever. So he's practicing at the rink and there's an attack and then the magical girl shows up and Yuri's trying not to freak out too much that he's been saved by this magical girl in Japan that he is also a fan of. And then only the magical girl's been, like, injured or something, or Yuri continues to have no boundaries and follows the magical girl. Anyway, somehow in this circumstances, for some reason, Yuri detransforms within Yuri's vision. And maybe Yuri, like, had already decided that he wanted Yurio to be his successor, and so does it on purpose. Anyway, then Yurio is like, what? And Yuri is like, ah, yes, I guess you saw. Oh, no. And then they work it out, and eventually, like, the power passes from one to another so that then Yuri can concentrate solely on his skating and on Victor. And Yurio, having the drive that he does, definitely is able to handle both. Yeah. Otobek is, like, 100% his tuxedo mask. It's great. Happy holidays, Fleurichard. Naboo Power Makeup, created by Opal Song. Magical girl AUs this year, and I just finished recording one about the original trilogy of Star Wars, and now I'm going to record one about the prequel trilogy of Star Wars. So if you want a continuation of this that was recorded first, when all of these come out, listen to that. Keep an eye out for it. So, Magical Girl AU, prequels era Star Wars. And I decided that I didn't want the magical girl powers to be at all force related. So inheriting them couldn't be a destiny thing or any of that sort of jazz. What I figured out instead, like, and therefore I didn't really want Anakin to be a magical girl. I didn't really want Obi-Wan to be a magical girl. I want Padme to be a magical girl. And I want it to be a power that is handed down through the Naboo royal, like, it's handed down through Naboo royalty. And so, and that is one of the reasons why Naboo want young kids. Like, I know that that's also their, like, the way they think politically is they want young kids to be there, like, to lead them forward. But also because magical girls are, like, young kids, like 15-ish or whatever. That's sort of your peak as a magical girl or something. And so when you get elected into being the monarch on Naboo, you are also given this brooch, hairpiece, etc., some piece of jewelry that is extra bedazzled, that then allows you to become an iteration of the planet's protector. And so that adds a whole new dimension to Padme and protecting her planet. And while my instinct is fix everything, you can't really fix everything and then have everything also go poorly. like, and create the original trilogy, that sort of thing. And since I already did an original trilogy one, I don't really want to fix everything to do that. So I have to keep everything utmost tragic. But yeah, it would, like, for some reason, it doesn't change the events of canon. But it would be just this thing that Padme has access to. She can actually fight really well. I mean, she can fight in canon as well. But, like, she has this ability to transform into this magical girl to fight the evil in the universe. And it's her duty to do so, which is one of the reasons why, not just curiosity, but that's one of the reasons why she goes out into the Tatooine, like why she goes with the group into Tatooine. Because first off, her handmaidens know that she is, like, that she can transform into the magical girl, and so can probably defend herself from anything that's attacking her. And also, she needs to, you know, possibly slip away, transform into a magical girl and clean the place up for a little bit. So I'm trying to think about implications of this, like implications that won't, like, break canon, because most of the implications would break canon. I do think maybe if we're adding to tragedy that at some point, so I think, like, eventually, within the jump from episode one to episode two, Padme is obviously no longer queen. Now she's a senator, which means she's had to give up these magical girl powers to her successor, right? And so that's great. I'm trying to figure out how to get it so that she can give it to her kids without totally breaking the Naboo, like, entire, like, culturally, how she can do that. I might hand wave it. I do think that if somehow she is able to keep transforming into a magical girl and she does have this sort of, like, She is sort of moonlighting as a magical girl and really trying to help with this whole war thing and all of that jazz with the magical girl powers on top of everything, on top of all of her senatorial work. And maybe that's why they allow her to continue using it, is because she is in a place where she can do more good with it than Naboo. And now that the humans and Gungans on Naboo are both working together, I think maybe the Gungan magical girl has, you know, promised to cover the entire planet while they give Padme this locket, hairpiece, whatever, to go on, like, making changes. So she does that. And I think that in episode 3, one of the things that really drives Anakin, like, causes him to distrust Padme further, is that I think he finds out at some point that she is this magical girl. Like, first he figures out that she's leaving at odd hours and that she's out all night and that sort of thing, which is easy for Palpatine to imply that she's cheating on him, and that maybe the babies aren't his or that sort of thing. And then eventually he does find out that she is a magical girl, and then just it's this giant secret that she didn't tell him. So how can he trust anything that she says? And so it's actually something that pushes them further away. And I'm going to change the whole "I died in childbirth from a broken heart," or possibly a, like, ambiguous cross-galaxy force choke or something, to she shows up, and I don't know whether she will have had the babies already or whether she is still very heavily pregnant, but she shows up because Anakin has turned into one of the things that she needs to fight. And so she shows up in magical girl form. Anakin knows that it's her. And they fight before Obi-Wan even gets there. They fight, and Anakin straight up is like, "You have betrayed me, blah, 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 blah." And she'll have had the kids at this point. The visions of her dying in childbirth didn't account for her, like, maybe there were no visions of her dying in childbirth, or they were extremely false. Maybe it was all just like, "Oh, she's cheating on you," etc. type thing. Anyway, she's had the kids and she's like, "I've hidden them from you. You'll never find them." And then he, like, straight up murders her. No ambiguity about it. And Obi-Wan finds her body after his entire fight with Anakin, which goes about the same. And he finds her body, and which has transformed back, and makes sure that all of her things are divided up between the kids. And one of those things is this, like, super bejeweled hairpin or whatever. And it's one of the, and it's the only thing that he manages, like, I think he manages just to, like, tuck it in the blanket with Luke as Luke is being sent to Tatooine. And it's, like, one of the only things he can actually send with Luke to Tatooine or something like that. And then in some time between the original trilogy and the sequel, between Luke and Leia, they figure out what the bejeweled thing is, and they return it to Naboo, or at least attempt to return it to Naboo. And there's, you know, stuff there. So Naboo gets its cultural artifact back. The end. Happy holidays, Rena Jenkins. Warden Power Makeup? Created by Opal Song. I'm doing magical girl AUs this year, and wow, Alistair. Just Alistair. Alistair. I mean, really. Okay, so Alistair already has a bit of a, like, Cinderella vibe to his thing. So he's the bastard son of the king, being raised as a servant in a noble house, but as a servant in a noble house. And he's gonna be a Templar, which is basically a magic knight, which he's, like, kind of sold off to become a Templar. I don't think it's sold off, but he didn't really want to be. And then he becomes a Grey Warden, which, yeah, is magical all of its own. Doomed and magical, but still magical. And so, really, yeah, like, if there's anyone who is kind of a duh magical girl, it's Alistair. And also just his entire demeanor. Imagine him transforming, like, giant sparkles into, like, a skimpy battle outfit and saying with an utterly straight face all of the, like, hilarious magical girl, like, attack names and attacking with a wand. Just, like, defeating Darkspawn that way. It would be hilarious. Ugh, so funny. And I mean, obviously the warden would know, because the warden would figure it out, like, in the tower once all of their other friends are dead and they're battling the ogre, and Alistair eventually has to transform in order to, like, I don't know, hold off other waves of Darkspawn or something. And the warden is the only person who survives that actually knows. But I like to think that eventually the rest of the crew finds out, and it's super funny. Those are all the thoughts I have for now. Happy holidays, Keeper of Seeds. BuzzFeed Power Make Up! Created by Opal Song. So I'm doing Magical Girl AUs this year, and hear me out. BuzzFeed Unsolved. And it's Shane who's a magical girl. So every time they go into one of these haunted places, they are, like, legit haunted, but with things that normal people can't see. Like, there's dark energy there, or at least most of them are. But the reason that Shane is so chill is not because he can't see it. It's because he can, and because he's a magical girl. So anytime that the camera, like, there are chunks of time when the camera is, like, super focused on Ryan, and Ryan's doing the I am here alone in the dark or whatever stuff. And Shane, at some point during their filming process, maybe it's a bunch of times that doesn't get on camera, at some point, no matter where they go, Shane slips off for, like, 20 minutes, an hour, whatever. He slips away, transforms into magical girl, whatever magical girl form he is, and, like, banishes the evil spirits. It's great. Shane is like, I am getting paid to do my second job, to, like, go to places that I would normally have no access to because they're nowhere near me, to banish evil. This is great. And there are those shoots, like the cryptid shoots and all of those things where he just gets to chill. So that's also fun for him, because those shoots, he doesn't have extra responsibilities. Also, Shane in a magical girl uniform. It would be hilarious. And I mean, obviously, eventually, because this is fic, Ryan would find out and there would be this whole thing and then, you know, yada yada. But, like, yeah, just the concept. Happy holidays, Night Tracer. Volleyball Power Make Up! Created by Opal Song. So I'm obviously doing Magical Girl AUs this year, if you couldn't tell by the title. And Haikyuu. And I'm not even gonna, like, mess around with trying to do the non-obvious option here, like I have in a lot of the other ones that I've done where I've tried to find, like, the non-obvious option. No, here it's, like, straight up Hinata. Hinata, like, he has definitely got enough energy, and his magical girl suit is definitely volleyball themed. It probably looks kind of like a cheerleader outfit, even though, like, as far as I know, volleyball doesn't include cheerleaders, but, like, you know, his it looks kind of cheer like American cheerleady. I almost have nothing more to say. It's kind of so perfect. Probably he abandons his magical girl duties a lot to play volleyball. And so the whatever, like, mentor type figure, probably a talking animal, he has is incredibly unimpressed with him for that. But yeah, he does it anyway. Because volleyball. Oh, and also, hilarious thought, Kagayama would be the most hilarious tuxedo mask. The most hilarious. Alternately, Tsuki Moon Kid. Tsuki something, I forget the rest of his name. Anyway, he would also be a super hilarious tuxedo mask. Just like, constantly like, what are you doing? Why are you not doing this right? Why are you abandoning your duties? Yeah. Anyway, those are seriously all the thoughts I have. I have no, like, coherent storyline or anything like that. But just the concept alone has me smiling. So I hope it has you smiling too. Happy holidays, Rhea. Magic Power Make Up! Created by Opal Song. So I'm doing Magical Girl AUs this year. And Harry Potter. Harry Potter. So the obvious choice here is to make Harry Potter himself a magical girl. And you could, like, it would be super easy to make him a very young magical girl. So he's had these powers, these explainable powers that he knows what to do with because he has a talking animal already before Hogwarts. So at like 9 or 10, he's already out there fighting evil. But that makes him like really young when he does that. It does introduce the kind of hilarious circumstance where he does already know about magic. He just doesn't know about that kind of magic, like the wizarding kind of magic. He can already do magic, but not that kind of magic, and that kind of interferes with his ability to learn wizarding magic. And when everybody knows who he is, his first thought is that they know who he is because of Magical Girl. Oh my gosh, did I spoil my secret identity? Rather than, oh, they know who I am because I killed Voldemort as a baby. And you could explain away the Voldemort killing him as a baby as his mom had just died and Lily was a magical girl. And it was actually a combination of the whole wizarding love stuff and also the transfer of power from mother to child for a magical girl thing. And that was part of it. It could just be that you can't kill magical girls with the killing curse. I don't know. Actually, I like that whole thing enough, other than the Harry being really young and knowing about this, that I don't think I'm going to go for the less obvious option of someone else. Because this way we can also have Petunia know about magical girls, and everything gets a little weirder at that point, because if Petunia knows about magical girls, she could still be extremely bitter. Actually, this totally works because she could be extremely bitter that Lily got the power and not her, and that when Lily died, she had a kid, and so, like, the power might have gone to Petunia, except that Lily had a kid, and so the power went to the kid instead of to Petunia. And Petunia's always wanted to be a magical girl and help Lily on her, like, stuff. But no, obviously not. And there's the fact that Harry has been manifesting his magical girl powers and his, like, witch magic powers for years already, And the magical girl powers at least really shouldn't be coming to the fore until, like, you're like 14 or 15. Except that since they have been in effect since he was a baby, because of the whole, like, not killing him weird circumstances of his mom's death thing, he's been able to transform since much, much sooner. And so Petunia basically just resents the hell out of it. Because Lily, not only did she get the magical girl powers, but she also got to go to Hogwarts. And we could, in fact, world build this out even a little bit further and say that Lily wasn't necessarily, like, so the Evans line isn't necessarily a magical line at all, meaning that none of Dudley's kids would be, like, neither Dudley nor any of Dudley's kids would be up for being witches or wizards, provided Dudley does not fall in love with a witch or have babies, that their bio mom was a witch at least. Because if the Evans line is in fact instead a magical girl line, and that's how that's how the magic thing happens there. And just somehow Lily got on Hogwarts radar when she was like 10, which was weird for Hogwarts because normally, like, I would assume Muggleborns, like, show up when they're born with magic or at their first accidental magic. Lily, maybe she did magic outside the actual magical girl form, like she used some of her powers or something while not transformed, and that got her on the Hogwarts list. Maybe she was told and told and told and told that you don't use your magic outside the magical girl form, and then she did, except that I just said that she would have only gotten those powers at like 14, so that just contradicts itself. Anyway, I think that would be a neat idea to explore, having Harry and Lily not actually have the same type of magical power as anybody else. They're just learning to use the different magical power that they have in the ways that other people are using them, which means that you could do the thing where Lily, she was extremely brilliant and bright, but also not great at magic. You could do a bit of a change there. Anyway, I really like this concept now. Yeah, thanks for listening. Happy holidays, Rindle. Symbiote Power Make Up! Created by Opal Song. So I'm doing Magical Girl AUs this year as part of my holiday cards thing, and Venom. Because if there's somebody that needs a Magical Girl AU, it is Venom. And also, I had world built this entire thing in my head last night. I love this idea. I love this idea because it could take place in canon Venom universe, where, like, Eddie gets a Crunchyroll subscription or something. I don't know. Maybe Venom does it. Question marks there. It's not important. Somehow, Venom starts watching a bunch of magical girl animes. Everything from, like, old school Sailor Moon to that Bride one to, like, the campy magical boy anime that was on Crunchyroll for a while. There's probably more than one of that description, actually. Anyway, so Venom starts watching a bunch of magical girl animes, and for some reason, this, like, really gets to him. And he starts experimenting because he wants to be a pretty princess, too. He really likes this idea of, like, transforming and fighting bad guys because, hey, that's what they do. And also, Venom likes the pretty clothing. Don't ask me. It's Venom. So Venom starts experimenting with different types of, like, sailor uniforms that Eddie can wear when they go out to fight evil and eat faces. And Eddie is mostly just like, okay, I guess. Like, I guess this is fine. This is your time, so whatever, as long as my face isn't shown. And so they do everything from, like, sailor suits to, like, full-on wedding dresses, but everything is, like, black on black on black because Venom is making it out of Venom's own stuff of existence. And at one point, Venom is like, oh, This is not working. It's ruining my aesthetic. And just, like, causes all the hair below Eddie's, like, nose to fall out. Just, like, completely hairless. And Eddie is like, not okay, bro. Not okay. Bodily consent. Please don't make body mod things that you, that, like, we can't fix right away without, like, my consent. We gotta share this body, right? And so they negotiate, and turns out Eddie actually really likes the feel of freshly hairless legs. So they come to the deal that Venom can de-hair the Eddie's legs, possibly Eddie's arms, depending on how hairy they are. Like, some people have really hairy arms, some people don't, so dependent. His armpits and his jawline, so where his beard is. So Venom can get rid of the hair in those places when Venom is going to go out as magical girl Venom. Yeah. Also, at one point, Venom is kind of in love with all of the luscious locks of the magical girls, and figures out how to create, like, first Venom tries to talk Eddie into growing his hair out, and Eddie is like, no, rejected. I don't want that. It's way too much work, Venom. And Venom, after watching like 8 hours of hair tutorial YouTube, is like, okay, I get it. Way too much work. And Venom just creates his own luscious, luscious locks. Long and flowing and gorgeous. Yeah. And so Eddie goes out, and like every night is a different magical girl uniform, and it's hilarious. Also because the mask. So that was what Eddie's one, like, you have to have my face covered thing. Yeah. So the mask. It's also the one thing that doesn't maybe quite fit with the aesthetic choices Venom has made thus far. Because as much as Venom tries, Venom can't get rid of the, like, eye swoop. And so tries to work around it and make this, like, swoopy mask thing. And anyway, it's kind of hilarious and extremely terrifying. Yeah. And, like, yeah. I just really love the idea of Venom being a magical girlfriend girl. Yeah. Fun times. The end. Happy holidays, thrice and once. Sense8 Power Make Up! Created by Opal Song. So, my first thought when I was thinking about, a Sense8 magical girl AU thing, using canon and then adding magical girls into things, is that Kala would be an amazing magical girl. She's got the empathy there. She's got the skills. But I also want that dramatic reveal. And you can't really have dramatic reveals with the Sense8s. You can do the dramatic reveal of I am a Sense8 to non-Sense8s. But, like, within the cluster, it's really, really hard to have dramatic reveals. And that's one of the things that I really love about Magical Girl AUs is the unmasking. This is also the reason why, as much as I would love to have Wolfgang be a magical girl, it also wouldn't work. Even though the thought of Wolfgang in a short skirt running around Berlin, shooting people with massive guns, and Felix at his side as his sort of quote-unquote tuxedo mask dude slash sidekick. That really speaks to me. I would love it a lot. But yeah, so that also doesn't work because, again, no dramatic reveal there. But I figured out who would be the best dramatic reveal and also sort of fix some things that I had... that I was a little unsatisfied with the finale episode of Sense8, and that is having Rajan be a magical girl. So, Rajan. Now, I haven't quite decided when I want Rajan to start being a magical girl, whether it's a long time thing or whether it starts around the time that they're getting married or whether it starts after their honeymoon. I kind of like the idea of it being a long-term thing. And then right after their honeymoon, it sort of, like, there's some sort of massive evil infestation or, like, a big bad that starts attacking, etc. But, of course, like, non-magical people just see it as, you know, natural disasters or something, or, like, a string of robberies, and not anything sort of magical or evil. So it wouldn't trigger any of the Sense8s because none of them know, like, none of them are sort of tuned into the magical world. So instead of Rajan being part of this, like, sting operation that goes nowhere because they got canceled, instead of that whole thing, he is also hiding a massive secret and is, like, out fighting these things and, like, hiding that he is a magical girl from Kala throughout that entire thing. And then in the finale episode, when Rajan comes and is like, I would, you know, like, they told me, like, I got this email that said that Kala was really ill and that I needed to come see her, etc., etc. And then they flee a little bit and then they come back and Nomi beats up a bunch of people. And then as they're sitting on the couch and Kala has just sort of explained everything, explained that she's a Sense8, what that means, explained that she needs to go rescue Wolfgang, who she's really in love with. Sorry, that's awkward. Rajan takes it all really well. He believes them instantly. And in fact says that he was pretty sure he didn't know about the, like, affair thing, but that he kind of knew that she was psychic or something, like that she had something else going on, even if he didn't know that she was exactly a Sense8. And they're like, what? And then a second group of people invade, only this isn't BPO. This is people coming after Rajan, and Rajan transforms, beats them all up as a magical girl Rajan, and yeah, transforms back. And is like, well, there's my secret. And then it's like secrets out all around. And then Rajan is able to, like, super help with the rest of the finale, etc., etc. And then in the couple of months between them rocket launching down the bad guys and the wedding, Rajan has to go back to India or all over or whatever space. To defeat his, to defeat the big bad that he is fighting. And we're going to say he asks, Kala to stick around Wolfgang. Also, being a magical girl, Rajan can see, like, I don't know, red strings of fate or something, and knows that they are, like, you know, that as much as he is connected to Kala, Wolfgang is also connected to Kala, and he, you know, is trying to form this connection to Wolfgang. And anyway, they figure it all out with a relationship negotiation in there. Yeah. So even though they don't talk about it, that's one of the reasons that he's just suddenly okay with things, because he knows how these things go in magic. And maybe he always knew he was supposed to be part of a trio or something. He was just waiting for their third to come along. It was foretold. I really like that. Anyway, yeah, I would just like to acknowledge at the end of this that India as a culture very likely has a whole bunch of their own tropes and stuff with magical girls and or like that sort of ilk, like a magical princess figure or something to do with transforming into magic stuff. I use the Japanese magical girl anime concept sort of genre as the basis for this, mostly because I don't know anything about Indian culture, and this is going to be like 5 minutes long, and I didn't want to do like a whole host of research and then still get it wrong. But I would just like to put out there that Rajan's magical girl form would be in line with all of the, like, cultural things of India. It would be an Indian magical girl. Have an awesome day, Cass. The Prism Power Makeup Job. created by Opal Song. So I'm doing magical girl AUs this year, and leverage. Leverage. So, I mean, really, we have three choices here for magical girls, and I think the most hilarious would be having all three of our OT3 trio, Parker Hardison and Elliot, could be magical girls. In fact, all of them kind of are, but it really, you could easily have any of the three of them be, and I think it would be the most hilarious to have each, like, to have all of them be magical girls, but not realize it, because they're not, like, part of a team. So they keep disappearing at, like, random times, each of them, because they have to, like, go save a jewelry store, or, like, go defeat a giant monster, or whatever. And, of course, there's eventually the, I think they keep teaming up because they keep being in the same places, even when they're, like, way overseas on things. Not all the time, because I think they probably have different focuses. But, like, I like to think that maybe Parker's powers are, like, down a family line. Maybe they skipped a generation or something. But because of her upbringing, she really never had anybody to explain them to her. And Archie definitely knows and maybe trained her a little bit, I think. But I don't think that she has, like, a specific mentor figure. She just kind of figured it out on her own. But she really does believe in doing good things when she's a magical girl. Elliot, I think, is, like, a very traditional, maybe he's, like, a reincarnated princess or something, because that would be hilarious. He's the very traditional, like, he's wanted to do good things all the time as a magical girl. He understands his tradition. He had a mentor growing up, and then he joined the army, both because in his real life, like, in his non-magical girl life, he did need to do something, and he already knew that he was good at fighting things. And because when you're a bright-eyed 18-year-old and you are told that your country's military is doing great things, you are more inclined to believe them than when you are a jaded question mark age of his current self. Anyway, so he joins and tries to do the magical girl thing, you know, through basic training and whatever, and it lapses a lot, and then stuff happens, and then more stuff happens, and then my feeling is that he's mostly a lapsed magical girl when leverage canon starts. Like, he hasn't actually transformed in quite a while, because he feels too sort of, like, dirty and can't find that side of him anymore. And then canon happens, and he starts to get back into it. And it's this big thing when his magical girl form returns, because he's ultra badass. And I think Hardison's is something that's, either given to him or that he finds, and it's an object that then imparts power to him. Yeah, and he is the one out of all of them that is the most into, like, pure magical girl, like, I know what I'm doing, I want to help people, that sort of thing. The sort of the most pure good magical girl all the time. He doesn't lapse, he just continues to do it all the time, help out the little people with his magical girl powers. And then they team up a bunch, and then there's the dramatic reveal when, I don't know, they're all stuck in a sticky situation together and they need to get out, and then they transform, and, like, one and then two and then three of them, they all transform, and then they've, you know, beat up the baddie, and then, you know, things are way easier from there because they no longer have to sneak out to do patrols and stuff. Yeah. The end. Have an awesome day, Silver and Blue. Gundam Power Make Up! Created by Opal Song. So, I know I've done a lady AU of Gundam Wing already, but I don't think I've ever done a magical girl AU for Gundam Wing before. So now is the time. And magical girl AUs and Gundam Wing. Okay, so here's the thing. Any of the Gundam guys would be hilarious magical girls. In fact, okay, so here's the thing. Backtrack. Way back when, way back when I was a baby Opal, and I had just gotten into fan fiction maybe the year before, and I was hardcore into it. One of my very first fandoms that I was into was Sailor Moon. And I used to read tons of Sailor Moon fic and tons of Sailor Moon crossover fic. Specifically, like, I remember being into Sailor Moon in general, but I very specifically remember being hard into Sailor Moon Gundam Wing crossovers. Hard into it. It was a giant thing. What I am not sure I ever read, and definitely don't remember if I did read it, was a Sailor Moon Gundam Wing fusion, where the Sailor Scouts are reincarnated, like the planetary princesses are reincarnated as Gundam pilots. And to me, this is hilarious because, I mean, it already kind of maps. I think I'm going to map it the same way as was the, like, original pairings. But, like, okay. So, obviously, in this case, hero is Sailor Moon. Like, that's just what you do at this point. Hero is Sailor Moon. He's the quote-unquote main character of the series. It is really hilarious to think of Hero having to use love as his power. Because Hero and his emotions are maybe not the most in touch, even though he believes in being in touch with your emotions. Yeah, that's really hilarious. I remember pretty solidly that Troa is Jupiter, and I stand by that, if only because they're both tall and have brown hair, and their color that is associated with them in my brain is green. So, like, it works for me, personally, Troa as Jupiter, lightning powers and all that jazz. Okay, so here's where, oh, right, and Wufei is Mars. That, I believe, is also, like, pretty standard and pretty obvious in my brain, at least. Again, because color association is red for both of these characters, and both of these characters are the most traditional characters of the group. Mars in Sailor Moon is a priestess at a temple, and Wufei is Wufei and was a scholar, and is very passionate about his heritage. And now we have Duo and Catra. And here, I forget exactly who generally mapped onto who, or normally was paired with who in the crossovers. But I am going to say Catra gets Mercury. Both, we're going real visual here, which works for me in this case. I'm pretty sure Mercury and Catra's haircuts are fairly similar. Anyway, they both have short hair. Catra's obviously is not blue, but Catra is also the sort of the most intellectual of the five, barring Wufei's scholar self. But he's sort of the most tactical and the most I'm going to think about this thing. Yeah, and it works for me. Which leaves Venus as, like, Duo being the reincarnated Venus, which I think is hilarious because he, like, legit uses love as a power and just is over the top and has that hair. And also I can definitely see him running around in a mask being slightly antagonistic to Hero Sailor Moon. That would be really funny. Also, this sort of patterning out means that Relina would be the perfect tuxedo mask character, being the Prince of Earth, which she becomes Queen of Earth canonically for a hot second in Gundam Wing canon. And this just makes that, like, actually her inheritance. Yeah. I really enjoyed this mapping of the things. I have no actual plot or anything. I just really enjoyed that. Yeah. Happy holidays, Uanif. Inquisition Power Make Up! Created by Opal Song. So I'm doing Magical Girl AUs this year, and of course I'm going to do a Dragon Age Inquisition one. Why would I not? The question remains, who is the magical girl in the Inquisition? And, like, I mean, the obvious thing is to make the Inquisitor the magical girl, but considering I don't want to just write Inquisitor OC fic here, I am going to go with one of the others, one of the companions. And I think, honestly, any of the companions would be hilarious, but, okay. So, obviously, my bias in this fandom is towards, Iron Bull and Dorian, except that I just had an even better idea. I was gonna say either of them, but what about Cullen? What if Cullen is a magical girl on top of all of the other shit he had to go through? And what if it's a, like, late-in-life magical girl thing, or it went into dormancy? Oh my gosh, I love that. Okay, so Cullen. Cullen was a magical girl before he became, like, a full-on Templar, so all through his apprentice period and everything. He was a magical girl. He went out fighting Darkspawn, etc., etc., transforming into a skimpy battle outfit. It's great. He probably knew Alistair. I definitely recorded one of these for Dragon Age Origins where Alistair was a magical girl as well. And, like, they definitely met. It was great. But then he starts taking lyrium, and that suppresses his magical girl powers, which is this immense loss for him. But also, now that he started taking the lyrium and is a Templar, he has this whole new thing to do. And he is supposed to be guarding the tower and not supposed to be, like, running around after, like, demons and Darkspawn outside in the world. So, you know, he had hoped to magical girl it up in the tower, but he can handle this. And then shit gets real. Actually, it could be that he doesn't even realize that he can't transform because he's so focused on, like, I need to guard this tower, that he doesn't realize until the demons have invaded the tower in Origins, and he can't transform anymore. And he is thrown into despair because it's gone. His transformation is gone. All of his, like, magical girl goodness is gone, and he couldn't fight off the demons that way when, if he was able to transform, it would have been a cinch, etc., etc., etc. Which throws him into deep despair, which makes the things that happen in Kirkwall a little, well, he is also going through some shit, which he is in Dragon Age 2 canon anyway. And then we get to Inquisition, where he decides to stop taking lyrium to detox from it. And here's the thing, when he detoxes from it, when he stops taking it, for a while he's just without the Templar powers and without the Templar powers and without the Templar powers and just being a good knight. That's what he's doing. And then one day he's facing off against demons, possibly, facing off against demons somewhere. I don't know. Maybe he's leading a troop. Maybe he's with the Inquisitor. I don't know. And I don't really care. But at some point, he manages to transform. Let's say he was with the Inquisitor, because, yeah, just privacy's sake. And they were out doing a thing. They got surrounded by demons. The Inquisitor is kicking ass. He is kicking ass. And then suddenly this magic like blows up out of nowhere. And it's not the Inquisitor that did it with the magic hand. It is Cullen who transforms into a magical girl, short battle skirt and all. And he like breaks down crying in relief because it's back. And also now he knows that it was Illyrium. Because he didn't know that before. He just thought it had abandoned him because he was a terrible person or something. Yeah. And then he has magical girl powers and so is able to help and maybe actually joins your team even though he is the leader of an army. Yay! Magical girl Cullen. King Alistair definitely comes to visit and they chat. It's hilarious. The end. Happy holidays, Rose. Hero Power Make Up! Created by Opal Song. So I'm doing Magical Girl AUs, and yeah, My Hero Academia. Yeah. We're just gonna go straight up for the obvious and make him Magical Girl Izuku. But here's the kicker. Because, okay, Magical Girl at this point is just the quirk or the powers or something. And One for All isn't so much a passing along of a quirk as it is a passing along of magical girl powers that have been around since the dawn of time. Like at this point, it also has a quirk involved, but like, yeah, which means that All Might is definitely a magical girl, which means All Might, instead of being like giant, masculine, American superhero thing, he is still the giant, masculine body type, just like in a sailor fuku, basically. And he rocks it, and he owns it, and just that's who he is, as All Might. And so, of course, Izuku has absolutely idolized this from his very start, from being a tiny child. Because everything else about All Might is the same. It's just like, and I mean, he still punches people. He's just a magical girl while he does it and can like make a heart with his hands that then expands and like is like emotion smash or something like that, a la Sailor Moon. And then like the events of canon happen and Izuku gets gets One for All and like all that is great, except that All Might is kind of not a great teacher at the beginning, and he forgets sometimes exactly what's involved in being a magical girl, because a lot of his stuff was given to him by his predecessor, and yeah, he just forgets sometimes what's involved. So Izuku, like, his mom makes his costume again when he gets into UA. And he has so much trouble controlling this new quirk, which is basically exactly the same as canon. And he goes through the entire same thing until he gets to his like internship with Gran Torino. I think that's an internship. Anyway, he gets to the week that he hangs out with Gran Torino, and instead of the, like, oh, I need to think of it as my own, I need to control it that way, because I think maybe Izuku makes that leap a lot sooner in this thing. He's trying to think of it that way. Gran Torino lets him know that he needs to have, like, a transforming gadget, MacGuffin thing. Basically a bejeweled piece of jewelry or something that he can use to channel that power in order to transform him into the form that he needs to, etc., etc., etc. Which, hilariously, is why All Might reverts to All Might form even when he's super injured in his regular form, because that's his magical girl form. And so the whole body is kind of part of the costume, is part of the power. So Izuku spends some time, like, making, like, I don't know, a hair barrette, question mark? And then can suddenly transform. And everybody is like, wow, you are a massive All Might fan. Like, we knew, but, like, You're a massive All Might fan. But yeah, Deku is also a magical girl. This also makes Bakugo the most hilarious sort of tuxedo mask figure. And if we were going full on fusion with Sailor Moon and just like straight up doing like a Sailor Moon fusion, Bakugo would be the guy that like jumps in, does a whole bunch of explosions, and like doesn't actually help defeat any of the like actual enemies, and then says something and then, you know, goes away to fight his own battles. Anyway, yeah. Yeah. The end. Happy holidays, Cece.